Hi, welcome everybody to the latest in the TeachNet podcast series. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Michael McCann and Anne Kennedy, who are both teaching in Cloisterdulig. And we are going to be talking about artificial intelligence, specifically generative AI tools, and how students are using them in the college. So Michael and Anne, you're very welcome.
Thanks. How you doing, Michael?
Michael, lovely to be here.
And listen, we know that it's a very busy time in Cloisterdulig, and we are delighted to you both for coming along. And we also want to say a big thank you to our good friend, Kerry Archer, for organising this for us. So, Michael, I'm going to jump straight in. And first question, are students in Cloisterdulig, or more specifically, are students in your course using generative AI?
Yes, well, we know they're using it already at home and that. So we tried to sort of build on that a little bit. And I started using AI myself last year, and I found it very useful for myself when I was doing a particular course to help me study with exams. So what I thought then, how this could be useful for our students, you know. So Usually towards exam periods at the end of the year, what we do is we use the modular descriptor, and students, we try and get them to generate questions from the module descriptor that they can try and predict what might come up in an exam. We get different groups of students to produce different sets of questions, and then we put them against each other. So what we were doing was this year was we actually used AI to try and help them, see if they could actually help them generate answers, and then try and summarize those answers that they could actually make them useful for themselves if they were in a test situation, you know, and then they'd have a bank of questions that they could actually draw upon and study for their exams. And we found that helped them a lot.
Very interesting. And I just want to go back. You said you were studying yourself, and you were the student there for a while last year. Can you tell us how you used it for your own studying?
Yeah, well, what I would do would be something similar to what I had just suggested, which was I would know all the topical areas that I needed to study, and then I would sort of generate or try to predict what questions would come up, and then on my course anyway, I would sort of generate a list of, I'd get AI to generate answers, very specific answers for what I wanted. And then, of course, you can't trust AI to be honest or to be exactly what you want. So you'd have to actually go through the answers yourself then and try and take out the relevant pieces out of that, you know, and that's where I found it very useful, like where it saved that initial kind of researching time when you're looking for stuff online or whatever, it saved a lot of that time.
Very good. And I think that whole critical perspective that you're saying that you're getting the students to take to the questions and which you took yourself is very important, because as we know, these tools, as one person described them last year, they are BS generators. I mean, they will generate any amount of text we want. But I think it's in the true spirit of just generating content. And we have to be very critical about what they produced. And I forgot to ask Michael, but I'll come back to him in a second. Tell us what you're teaching and how you see your students and yourself using Gen AI at the moment.
So I have been teaching computer science now for the last 20 years at levels 5 and 6 in Cloisterdulig. And I have to admit, this would be the first year I've brought it into my classroom in itself. What I am trying to get my second years to do is to understand like that the biases in AI, and look at when they put in a question, can they then get a second reference? Well, actually a first reference. So can they get another reference point on the internet? And is it valid? Is that piece of information valid? They do then sit around in groups and look to see, is there a bias in their particular answer? Does a partner in the group have a different answer, different information, and why that might be? I think as computer scientists, they have a responsibility to understand where this is going and what it means. And so they need to understand what is behind that black box. And I likened it to, if I was teaching media studies, I would show it on a television, but they wouldn't need to know how the television worked. But if I was teaching electronics, they would need to know how the television worked. As computer scientists, they need to know how this works and its limitations.
Absolutely. I think it's fascinating in both examples that you've given. I think some people think that all of this use of generative AI tools by students is done in isolation, at home, on the bus or in the train or whatever. But both of you are using generative AI to kickstart a conversation, a discussion. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely, yeah. Also, can I just mention there, sometimes it's actually useful, the concept of kind of reverse engineering something. It's very useful because I teach a lot of IT and some of that is web authoring and web development. So what I do sometimes is I might give students, what I'm doing at the moment is I'm giving them a piece of, say, JavaScript code, which will, it's very raw and it would generate a carousel, for example, with some text overlays on images that would be moving over and back. So I would generate that with AI and I would give it to them and tell them to sort of deconstruct it and then try and adapt it into their own websites for themselves. So they're taking something that's been AI generated and then revamping it and reusing it. And in order to do that, then they have to actually know how it functions and how it works. I think that follows up on what Anne is kind of saying. It's a useful way to kind of use the tools. It's what most people will be using in industry anyway in the future. That's the way they'll kind of be doing it, you know?
Yeah. So, no, I think that's really interesting. And I mean, I learned, I'm not a computer scientist like both of you, but I did once upon a time learn C++, I won't name the college, and I learned it off of Blackboard. And I always found it quite difficult. I mean, it seems to me that you are, both of you are using this in a way that will engage and motivate the students so that they can engage in more active forms of learning.
Yeah, and I think, and what Michael's saying is so interesting, because when you go into industry, the chances of you being asked to write something from scratch is so remote. Chances are you're going to be given a piece of code and told, improve that.
Yes.
And so to understand how to decode another person's coding or another artificial intelligence's coding is actually a very valid skill. I think to not understand AI would be sticking your head in the sand and ignoring the reality out in industry.
Yeah. And I was listening to a YouTube video last evening from a conference in Belfast last week on generative AI in education. And the keynote speaker was actually citing how computer programmers, I can't remember the website you mentioned, where they all typically went to get code, find code, share code. I think it was another one, but it doesn't matter. Same principle, Michael, but that it almost collapsed mid-year because they had all moved across to ChatGPT. But the website in question then started to bring generative AI into the website, because this is a really valid way for people in the industry to use tools like ChatGPT.
This would be the challenge of their age. Every year, and myself and Michael, I'm not giving away any ages here, but we've been in this scheme a long time. We've seen those changes in what's challenging our students coming out. I was actually graduating on a Y2K problem, and obviously that is not the issue anymore.
No.
So when you go back into industry, and we do, we refresh our knowledge very frequently to make sure our knowledge base is relevant. We can see that this is now the challenge for the age coming out. ChatGPT and generative AI is what our students are going to be facing out in the workplace. And it is going to be, how do they train those machines? How are they going to ask the right questions? And so they can create the context, because the AI can't create the context at this point.
And Anne, you made a very interesting comment when we were chatting before we started. And you equated, if I heard you correctly, ChatGPT or generative AI tools in general to ask an intern.
It was a friend who described that it's not like asking an expert. It is like asking an intern. They don't know what they don't know. And so when I asked my students, for example, yesterday in a class, I asked them, go out and describe to me different organizational charts and the information flow in them. And we obviously, as a computer science class, have been talking about software development kind of organizational structures, but the chat did not know that. And so the chat was giving back loads of different examples that were not relevant to our particular class. And this was very interesting. So we did actually pinpoint in on it, and we saw who was looking at it and the irrelevance of certain points that I could show them. It does reassure me that teachers will never be redundant.
They will never be
replaced by the AI.
Yeah.
To be able to understand that interpersonal relationship and that context, that human context.
Michael, I feel you want to add to that.
Well, no, I think for us as teachers, we have to discern, when we're assessing our students and when we're taking work off our students, we have to be able to, and we've always done this. We kind of went into this area where we're relying on tools to help us now, turn it in and AI and turn it in and things like that. And I think that some of these detection tools will help us, but we also have to rely on our own intuition as well and what we know and what we think. And we have to get our students to do the same. And I know there's people with a lot of concerns around this, around the various issues around AI, and we're all aware of that as well. And we're trying to educate our students on this as well, the dangers of it and the risks of it. But also there's a lot of useful areas there as well that are really helpful for them. And one of them is, for example, being able to take a piece of work, say, for example, if it's communications, for example, and they generate a piece of work. And rather than just submitting that and claiming it as their own, getting them to sort of summarize that in their own words in front of you, like in the classroom, you know, you can see them processing it and considering it and understanding it. And you get, they're getting all the different levels, you know, all the various elements are included in that. That's where it starts coming into its own then, you know.
And yeah, so you've touched on the whole area of assessment there. And I think you were also chatting to me at the outset a little bit about how they can use these tools. I think you had a story yesterday of a student that was using QuillBot. Do you want to tell us that?
One of my students in the class was kind of, we were working away on a website, you know, and it was actually designed for the website on the new module for the level six. And the student was working away using QuillBot to generate text, you know, and normally we get them to use lorem ipsum and all that. And I asked him, like, I said, what are you trying to do here? And he goes, well, I'm just trying to generate a kind of a piece of text that I can use in my website. And I said, well, that's okay to use. That's okay. That's fine to do that because you're not actually being assessed on the actual text itself per se. It's how it looks and how it appears and how it's utilized within the website. You know what I mean? So the content itself is not really that relevant. So for certain areas like this, it's actually fine, you know. It was just, I think he was trying to be subtle about using it.
Again, I was reading a paper the other day from Israel, and they were talking that our students are using these tools. And I think it's very interesting that your gut feeling is that they are using them. You know they're using them, but oftentimes it's not that visible in all classrooms. I think in your cases it is. And they were talking about that we really need to develop their critical thinking, their creative thinking, and their originality around using these tools. And I wonder, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, my daughter actually mentioned to me recently, like, she was afraid that AI would just take over everything. And she loves art and drawing and all that kind of stuff. And I said, yeah, but I mean, you can look at AI as being a kind of a starting point.
Yes.
As being something that you can begin with. And then there's certain things that it just cannot do, you know, and certain things, you know, it requires that human thing to give that creative element to it and to give that conscious awareness of what a human being has, to add that into the creative process. And in terms of, like, students who are using it, say for communications to generate a piece of literature or a story or something like that they might want to do, I mean, it becomes fairly obvious when it's not their work. And you can compare it with work they've done previously. And we do that with our inductions, like where we take a sample of work of students. And we can determine from that, like, whether this is the student's work or not. And what we want them to then do is to try and regenerate it in their own way, like STEM and their experiences and their understanding of the world, you know?
No, it makes a lot of sense. Anne, have you any thoughts on that? I mean, how do we, you know, this fear around originality and, again, the creativity piece, and I think you're well on the way in Cláiste Dúlaeg, within your classes anyway, to develop that critical thinking. Any thoughts on that?
Yes, and when Michael was just describing the communications module, I think it's nearly clearer when it's in communications because it has to be their own words, has to be creative. But when they're handing up basic programming to us, it's kind of nearly hard to justify why they'd have to do basic programming themselves when it's so easy to generate it out in the industry and on ChatGPT. And so they will all look the same. And the best way to do it will be ChatGPT. However, they need to get beyond those basics. And the only way to get beyond it is to start at the basics.
Yeah.
That can be very challenging for them. And what I teach is the software development side of it and the project management side of it. So not only are you going to be doing that programming, which will be a significant portion of your work, depending on the size of your company, but you have to then also understand, is that what the customer wants? Have you listened to that customer? All that human interaction, have you considered all the accessibility for that? And to be honest, actually, the accessibility side, you're better off going into AI, at least to give you a jumping off point. However, I do have links into different groups, like, say, the National Council for the Blind, the National Deaf Council. They would help me understand, actually, no, there is another layer on top of that that you need to consider. And so while AI is enabling me to get the basic level of accessibility to get myself to the next level, I do need to go talk to a human being who understands those issues.
Actually, I was looking at a very interesting presentation there before I came on. It was actually one that QQI had. It's on their website. And it actually was around assistive technologies in general, and very good PowerPoint. But I mean, a lot of people see that these tools are assistive for the teacher. I'm using assistive in its fullest form, assistive for the teacher and the student. And again, Anne, you were sharing how you used it, I think, in the last few days yourself to help you.
So I was, for example, I needed to get an exercise out to my students on databases. And so I just plugged into ChatGPT, give me the codes that will generate a database for me. And so then my students can basically search that particular database for particular information. And so rather than me thinking of 20 names of people and countries where they lived and fictional addresses, I just thought, that is not how I need to be spending my time today. And so that was a ChatGPT job that was nice and quick, got it out. To be honest, it came back and it wasn't exactly what I needed. So I was able to go in and fix, you know, a couple of bits and pieces because I knew what I needed. But it was very much a case of what would have taken me, and quite painfully, oh, how many times can I write down John and Mary and Tom and Pat and all my other names that I go to? The idea that ChatGPT could cut out that hour of work into 10 minutes was really invaluable.
We're coming to the end here but I think we'll have to come back to you both. There's so much more I want to ask you. I think there in that last example, you've captured, I think, the promise here for a lot of us that these generative AI tools, and they're getting more powerful by the day, will save teachers' time will save students' time. And again, what I'm hearing from both of you is that much of the classes in Kalash Dudulig are looking at this more from a critical perspective, discussing code, sharing it with peers. So it's more active forms of learning. And it's saving people time, ultimately, for some of the more mundane tasks they may have to engage in. Michael?
Yeah, I mean, it does generate these efficiencies. And I kind of liken it to, imagine a car mechanic. You're training to be a car mechanic, and a car mechanic can explain all about the engine to you and do all of that. Yeah. But if you want an apprentice to learn about an engine, one of the best ways to do it is actually to get an old engine and take it apart and to pull all the bits and see how it actually functions. And I find that to be a very useful approach. We can actually take that application and use that idea in coding for developing websites, where you can just take something apart, see how it works, and put it back together in a different way. And it's very, very useful like that. And then if you are suspicious anyway about a student who might generate something like a piece of code or whatever, what we find is we can actually ask them and test them on it. Just sample their knowledge, verbally.
Anne, do you want to have the last word? What are your thoughts about where this is going or where it could go, particularly for students?
I think in the course itself, obviously, computer science is the place where you're going to be learning about ChatGPT. It's going to be relevant in every single course. And it's going to be relevant to students when they get out into industry. This isn't just a school's isolation thing to happen. Yeah. I think it is the challenge of the age. I genuinely think that this is going to be as revolutionary as the internet was when it came out and we realized all the information was out there. Who's going to curate it? Who is going to manage it? And how are we going to use it effectively?
Well, I think that's a really good place to stop. I'm hearing echoes there of the need for digital literacy across all of our further education and training courses, right down into secondary schools and into our primaries, that we need to start this right away. And as I'm listening to you both, I'm kind of thinking, I'm even older than you, I think. Once upon a time, we used to have a thing called ECDL, where we used to teach word processing and all sorts of. My mother even did database management. I don't know why she ever needed to do that. But I think we now need an ECDL for the modern age, which focuses on AI and how we use it in our lives. So that's for another day. But I just want to thank you both for taking time out of your busy schedule and for sharing at a very high level what's going on in Kalash Dudulig and what particularly is going on in both of your classes. So thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thanks, Michael. That's brilliant. Thank you very much.